Welcome to the Tri-State Space Program. This is the first of two podcasts with previous podcast guests Zach Evans and Jesse Reininger. The discussion winds in and out of music, politics, and philosophy. Thanks for listening. I'm going to put together an episode featuring the music of some of the musicians I've had on thus far, so look out for that. For now, here's my fellow journalists and musicians, Zach Evans and Jesse Reininger. Tri-State Space Program. I'm sitting here with Zach Evans and Jesse Reininger, and I really just wanted to start out this conversation by saying that if it sounds different, it's because we're in the new Jangle Sheep room, and I have a lot of lights and a lot of shit on the walls, but it's not quite as chaotic as the old Jangle Sheep room. And I really just wanted to get into, like, as a musician, the vibe of a room means a lot to it plays a part in the result of the music and what it, I think it's like a big part of it, your practice space.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, not just practice space, especially the bars you're playing at or the venue you're playing at.
Oh, right, right.
How cool it is, it depends on how you're going to feel, I guess, or the people who are in that room.
Right.
But I dig this space that we're in right now. In our jam room, we have Christmas lights, too. I guess Christmas lights are kind of universal.
Yeah. Just wait for November and go buy a shit ton of them.
Exactly.
I mean, it kind of shows also how you feel about the band, like something you really care about and everything, you know, something you're nurturing, as opposed to, like, last minute we were practicing in a dingy basement with, like, you know, dogs.
Last minute it was a cover band Jesse and I were in for a while, so... If, in case no one knows, listens to this probably will know.
But we thank God for that.
Yeah, you know? Right.
Because, and then you're talking about venues. Also, the first gig that we played was, like, just under some awning outside. They were doing a car show or something.
Nobody was listening to us. I was drumming, and I was the drummer then, right?
Yeah, you were, and nobody was listening to us. There were some people that we knew, of course, in front, you know. But then, and then after that, we played at a Legion, where it's like just a bunch of old people sitting there, not dancing or
not doing anything, just sitting there like
staring at you dumbfoundedly. Play Johnny
Cash.
Waiting
for the pool table to open up. So, okay, speaking of first shows, you guys, your band just had their first show, right?
We just had our first show. Yeah, Trash Love's first public appearance was recently at the John Lennon Night, 15th annual locally. It was the 35th anniversary of his assassination.
That
was terrible.
So it was a bunch of bands playing various John Lennon and Beatles tunes.
Cool. What did you open with?
We kept a tight 20-minute set. Actually, it was 18 minutes. We opened with Your Blues, which is off the White Album. It's a hard rock and blues tune. We pretty much stuck with all the Lennon tunes that were angry and loud, which was not the vibe of the room.
Cold Turkey?
Cold Turkey was the second song.
Ah,
Your Blues, Cold Turkey. Then we went psychedelic and did Tomorrow Never Knows. So we just got spaced out. We did this Cold Turkey into Tomorrow Never Knows, like it's one song. Mm-hmm. And then from that, like it was one song, we did Come Together. That everybody knows. And that's one we've actually been practicing on for a few months. The rest of those songs we just threw together in a week.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, just for the event. But yeah, we were loud and distorted, and the mix was shitty, but it was a good show, I think, overall. Mm.
Okay, so what do you guys think about this? You saying that, and me hearing about it actually reminded me of this idea I've had for a long time of doing an Elliott Smith night somewhere, inviting a bunch of people to do that.
Yeah. I would be there.
Yeah.
I would be there. I'd like to play.
Yeah.
And they had that... they had a tribute nationwide across a lot of different places. That was in 2013 or 14.
But 13, I think.
Yeah, and I think I'm pretty sure they had something at least around here. I don't know if there was something specifically in Evans, but I would go for an annual one. You know, because
October 10th is that the anniversary of his death? I think. I think it is. I think it's October 10th or 21st or something. I don't know. It's in October, so just have kind of like a fall gathering, you know. It's not
it's not, especially this year, it hasn't been as cold, you know, in
not
October.
At all.
Yeah. And maybe next year, maybe it'll follow suit. It'll, you know, we're still pumping shit into the atmosphere, so it'll probably stay like that.
I played a Tom Waits night in Evansville like two
really?
Years ago. That was crazy. Cool. Great crowd. Mm-hmm. Like, a lot
That's
of
awesome.
People was packed in the Penny Lane downtown. And yeah, everybody brought good songs. It was a cool, weird event, but you just don't see too many other tribute nights. John Annual is very annual. John Lennon is nice annual performance, but I think we've had other ones. Maybe there was a Bob Dylan night. Elliott Smith night, I'd get behind that.
Oh, yeah.
I think you get a lot of weirdos out.
I think Elliott Smith for a lot of people is just kind of an emotional thing because, I mean, even if you look at Ben Folds, he wrote that song, Late, I think is the name of it, about
right.
Elliott Smith, and he said in that interview portion that or in the song, he says, "You got me through a lot," which is kind of like speaks to the escapism in music in general. And just like Elliott Smith being that for a lot of people, including myself and you guys too, probably
just
listen
to
it when you're sad.
Or just a way to deal with your problems, like something
right?
that you really can't, like especially things that you don't have the mental capacity or the mental emotional toolbox to do it, you know. And a lot of that, it's a way to analyze your own situations because like in that documentary Heaven Adores You, you know, there's an art designer they worked with in LA said that you know, that for that he would put like his songs would be so personal but he would take just enough out of it for you to fill in the blanks, you know. And that's what good music really does, the stuff that lasts anyway. I mean, there's still good music that's specific and like you know, for the something the person needed to get out, but you know, the things that really last and a lot of people like have that emotional response to are like that, you know.
Yeah. And it really just music in general, but especially the stuff you really like and you can really get into kind of keeps your mind away from all the bullshit that all three of us have worked in media in some capacity, and Zach and I still do right now. So it's like we've all worked at the Courier, actually. So we all worked there at one time. One time, like there was a time like of a few months where we all three worked there at the same time, and it's like we get all this negativity blasted at us all the time when you're in the news. You know, that's really what you report.
Yeah.
So, you know, a lot of shit that's in the news is what we're trying to get away from when we're doing music, because we're not thinking about all that.
It's really funny because it is a field that has been demonized for so long, you know, like forever. And I just, especially in our culture and in America, you know, and I feel like there's some work behind that, but it's like, and you know, I told you I was listening to a lot of David Cross stand up lately and everything, and in one of his specials and everything, he says something like, that in China, you know, they will get thrown in these internment camps or executed for like wanting to, maybe we could have one more newspaper or something. No, you know, but in America, we have unlimited access to all the news we want. We don't want it. And in fact, we demonize the people that work at it and, you know, and all that stuff. It's ridiculous.
Yeah. It didn't used to always be that way. I mean, and the Nixon time, you know, after Watergate, you know, people love newspapers and the media. We were, you know, we were actually the fourth estate. We were that wing checking and balancing the rest of the government. And then that love for media just died, probably with Reagan and the rest of the war on drugs. And in the 80s also, that was the era of Fox News when it launched as one of the first 24-hour cable news networks after CNN. And it's always been reporting its own brand of news, which is, I think, led to the degradation of
news. It's brutal.
You know, that just such obvious attempts at biasing the news, as you can see in Fox News and in MSNBC for, you know, a liberal slant, I suppose.
Yeah, both of them,
And it makes people not trust us more.
Right. It's so, I mean, you have to almost reach out and listen to other countries' news stations like BBC or Al Jazeera if you want to hear, like, an unbiased approach to what's going on in your own country, you know? It's sad and ridiculous.
The Guardian. Guardian's decent, definitely. There's a lot of newspapers from outside the U.S. that I definitely, when I see an article about, like, let's say, like, even, like, things, like, that are supposed to be internal, really, like Kim Davis, why would The Guardian give a shit? But The Guardian wrote articles about it, I'm sure, because it was such a big deal, and that was such a third, you know, perspective. It was just, like, such a out of, you know, out of nowhere, kind of, when you read The Guardian's article about something that happens in Kentucky.
Yeah, like a county clerk in Kentucky, small minor office in some random part of Kentucky.
Right, that no one has even heard of before she made waves, you know?
Yeah.
And it's funny, you read that and it's like, oh, that's such a third-party perspective of it, really. And it's nice to get that. And Snowden, that was all in The Guardian, right?
Right, so, oh yeah, that was all straight.
The Guardian's cool, fantastic. Yeah. I like The Guardian.
Right.
I definitely, when I see it on Twitter, when I see they're writing about something, I click on it before I click on anything else.
And now, I mean, talking about, like, you can look at The Guardian or other, the global news organizations to hear a different perspectives about the whole Syrian refugee crisis, you know. And but, like, it seems like, especially after the tragedy that happened in Paris and everything, now our media in particular is just, like, really, I mean, you do hear sympathetic stories, to people sympathetic to the cause and everything, but now it's just flooded with this anti-Semitic type of, you know, and even the channels that kind of are sympathetic to the cause are still, like, they have to cover, you know, these other people that are saying all of these awful things, you know, and so it make, I don't know, it's just...
Really, it's about the refugees. It came down to that, it seemed. It's, which is weird that, you know, right after this terrible thing happens, it's like all the people that are trying to escape that same thing are just no longer matter. Like, all lives matter until they're Syrian refugees.
Right. Yeah, it's, that's, I mean, it's awful where we're at with it, you know, and it almost seems orchestrated. And it does, it has to have been.
It's fucking
certainly orchestrated.
Yeah, I mean, and it, how... It just, you lose heart in our culture and everything to see, like, some of us can sit there and be like, well, obviously these guys have these, are trying to create this hatred towards that to fuel their, you know, their cause and everything like that. And to see, like, so many people just following along like little puppies, you know, like, yeah, okay, I would hate these people now. And I don't know, it's just been one thing after the other ever since 9/11, pretty much, or even really the Gulf War, we've just kind of progressively, that's created a new new demon or whatever.
Yeah, we're just so detached from everybody else in humanity, like, we just don't care about them.
No.
Like, they're not real people to us.
Yeah.
Right.
Not us here in
we're
the
almost
room,
taught
but,
that
you know.
In school, practically, like,
sure.
You know? It depends on where you go, but... In elementary school, I guess I had a decent, like, you know, they gave us some cultural perspective, but it wasn't great. It was in Kentucky, Audubon Elementary. We had great test scores. Bill Clinton showed up to the elementary school when I went there. It was the class before me got really good grades. And so when I was in fifth grade, he came to school.
You came along and fucked it all up.
I guess so, yeah, pretty much, yeah. But maybe I was in fourth grade. I don't know. One of the two. But, yeah, he showed up, and he was like, he gave a boring fucking speech because I was 9 or 10, and I didn't understand that Bill Clinton would become probably the best president we, like, that was around while I was alive, been alive. Mm-hmm. She got elected 2 years after. It's weird to think that I was born when George H.W. Bush was president.
Yeah.
Like, it's weird to think that. You two? All three of us?
Same here, yeah.
Okay, yeah. We're,
Actually, technically, I was born in the last few months of the Reagan administration, so...
Really?
Yeah, that's been our perspective. That's what we grew up in, was...
Right?
The 90s through the first Bush, the Clinton to...
Yeah.
Bush Jr.
Yeah.
And then I guess, you know, this might be a good transition to talk about the presidential race with the
right.
Other.
Yeah, it is. Since, yeah, because the Syrian refugees is a big
You know, if we're talking about people are making idiotic comments about refugees,
yeah,
we can talk about the Donald.
Yeah, we should. Just because he's on his way out. I feel like now. I feel like finally, Ted Cruz is like, you know, which I hate saying that I'm glad that Ted Cruz is. You know, finally, hopefully about to dwarf him. And then whoever takes over for Ted Cruz eventually, you know, whatever. But I just do not want Donald Trump to be number one for the Republicans.
It's just embarrassing.
Yeah, it is.
You know?
Like,
I mean...
it's very telling about what's going on in our country, though. The fact that this guy can pull the poll numbers and the media attention he can. It's really a fucked up description of the state of affairs in this country.
It is.
What I'm interested in seeing is if Donald decides to actually run as an independent.
Right.
Let's, I mean, he obviously has angered the Republican majority, the establishment Republicans, yeah. You know, the people who have been building the dynasty for years. Mm-hmm. He's going against the narrative and pissing off the people with the money.
Well, that's the mentality. That's the candidate that people want now. I mean, because everyone is fed up with the system, you know. Yeah. I mean, they're turning to the wrong answers, but, you know. Yeah. But it's still, I mean, that's part of a big reason why Bernie Sanders has been so successful, you mm-hmm. know, building momentum and everything.
People are sick of the shit, man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's, I mean, who isn't?
It's so interesting how
they can
touch on the people who are sick of the establishment, and there could be the two most opposite candidates imaginable between Donald mm-hmm. Trump and Bernie Sanders.
Yeah.
It's just, it's that, like, going back to what we were talking about at Bias News, Fox and MSNBC, we're just throwing up red and blue flags, you know, mm-hmm. and, I mean, we were talking about people hating journalists. Well, now people have a journalist like Bill O'Reilly or Rachel Maddow or something they really cling to and then fucking hate everyone else, sure. you mm-hmm. know, but, right. and so it's just, it's what we have created, what has been orchestrated, created in our society, this dichotomy that we've created, two different cultures that we're living in, and it's all leading up to this point that everyone is fed up with all the system and everything, so that's why you get, you know, everyone's building up their ultimate, I don't, it's just kind of like Donald Trump versus, yeah, Bernie Sanders or whatever, as opposed, that's two extreme sects of society that are just, you know.
That aren't quite, I don't know, at one time, they were number one in some portion, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, Bernie Sanders has won certain polls.
Yeah, and he's doing well in New Hampshire, which is the first primary.
Right.
So that's a pretty big milestone, but...
But that's kind of his area, you know? Right. I mean, it is.
You know, and New England, a very progressive area.
I mean, yeah, see, someone like Hillary Clinton can win in other states, across, like, other important states, you know, even in the South or Midwest or whatever, she can win up there, whereas Bernie Sanders, you know, he is kind of an everyman, kind of relate to that, but at the same time, you know, he doesn't have that name drop just like...
That's
you
true.
Know,
right. But Hillary Clinton does have the name, and she does have that the notoriety that goes with her name mm-hmm. because she's been around so long, but I just think she's too much of a centrist. She's too, like, I don't know, she's gone left lately, but that's because she had to, you know? She's going with the tide,
right.
Whereas Bernie has been saying the same shit the whole time.
Yes.
Right.
You know?
Right.
One message since he has been in office, you know? And, I mean, she has evolved on a lot of issues Clinton has, but that's the way she would put it. But right. But yeah, she's always been centrist, though, and I feel like that, you know, I said this, I think, before on here, but that Bernie Sanders really is part of the good that he's doing in the race is that he forces her to go at least a little left, you know? She has to, if she is going, has any chance of collecting his constituency after he, if he, you know, drops out or whatever eventually, but, you know, it's...
Did you notice Bernie Sanders had, like, a media event happened with Black Lives Matter, and then a few days later, Hillary Clinton had a media event, like, she was talking to Black Lives Matter, and it's like, right. She's, you know, he's doing shit first, and she's following and getting just as much media, and it's like, man... He had that shit happen first, and then you made it happen. To him, it happened spontaneously because Black Lives Matter people know that there'll be some people at a Bernie Sanders rally that will agree with them.
Sure.
Totally agree with them. They're totally on board with Black Lives Matter. Like, I'm not saying I'm not, or I'm not saying anything bad about Black Lives Matter necessarily. I think they take some things too far. Just like I think that you know what I mean? Every group of people right. that are like, every kind of ideology like that takes some things too far.
Sure. Yeah, so, to be an interest group or a lobbying group, you have to be as extreme as you can be, I guess.
And just do it.
No, all right. I'm just going to pop
he's
guys.
He's popping a drink.
I'm just going
to... I was thinking about going and getting a beer, actually. So I'm going to get up in a minute and go get a beer, and you guys could keep talking. But,
okay.
So really... I think every group takes a lot of shit too far, and for even like atheists I'm in that group. Yeah, I have too.
I think it's part of the progression as
And then you lay back. You get hard and then you lay back.
I mean, it's so ironic that like you're brought up almost, and especially in where the area we live, militant Christian, you know, anything like that. Right. Just like, oh, it's Jesus all the way, you know, and then and then whenever you figure out it's all bullshit, then
you reach the age of reason.
Then you just do a flip, and you have all that fire that you had from being a Christian now turn to like hating on this shit, and it's like, oh, no way, I gotta preach the gospel of nothing, and
the Richard Dawkins gospel and the Sam Harris and all that shit, which I still like all those guys. Like, I like their writings and everything. Mm-hmm. Sam Harris, Letter to Your Christian Nation, will forever be one of my favorite fucking PDFs I've read. And same with Richard Dawkins, The God Delusion. Yeah. Great fucking book. And he explains a lot about evolution in there, and he really explains it at a level that layman person can understand.
Mm-hmm.
And
right.
It's great. It's fucking awesome. Like, just reading that, at the perfect time, I was like 21 or 22, and it was just the perfect age to read that shit.
Yeah.
So I was already so skeptical, and this just parroted everything I'd been thinking and took it to like way further. And that's what I think about militant atheists. Mm. And I used to be one, and it's like, you can't, though. You can't force your shit down someone else's throat because they're not going to take it. Like, they're, you know. Which sounds so sexual.
Turned into such a hypocrite, you know? Because, I mean, I'm the type of atheist that I think that, you know, if you want to believe in whatever you believe in, okay, whatever. Keep it to yourself. Do it in your own way, I guess. And, you know, that's good for you and everything. But then, at the same time, I would be shoving my, doubt down someone else's throat as well, you know?
Well, it's just, I think it's good of any religious... anybody's religion, just to keep it moderate and keep it kind of to yourself, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know, I just don't understand. My family's been very good about the way they handle their, you know, they're Christian.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm from
my whole family
Kentucky,
too,
Indiana, so obviously. And they know how I feel. And we're all just kind of middle-of-the-line people, you know, spiritually, so we don't shove it down each other's throats. So.
Yeah.
I think this is how it should be.
Right. Well, just on that line there, my whole family is too, and my mother actually just texted me on my way here and told me that my grandmother, all she wants for Christmas is for her whole family to go to church with her this coming Sunday.
Sometimes you have to do it.
Now when we're talking about when I was militant atheist, I probably would have been like, nope, not doing it. But nowadays, I'm like, okay,
It'll make her happy or whatever.
Yeah, exactly. It's not...
It's a sacrifice.
Because you gotta go beyond yourself, you know?
Like, yeah.
You
have to
do that,
Yeah,
and it's and you know what? It's an hour of your life. And you know what? Sometimes what I've read verses from the Bible since I've been an atheist, for sure, since I've for sure given up, you know, God as a, you know, especially as a benevolent thing. I don't know, to where there's like love. You know what I mean? There, I just, ever since I've given that up, I have read some Bible verses that I was like, you know what, there's a fucking good moral in this. There's like actually there's actually a good story here.
Yeah.
It's some of the stories, obviously a lot of it's shit. A lot of it's like, you can rape your daughter if you want, and a lot of random fucked up shit.
Or kill her if she gets raped.
Exactly, like, yeah.
Guidebook on how best to objectify women. You know?
Yeah, it pretty much is. But there are some things in there that actually do have like a good story that are actually you know, that,
well, it's the greatest story in the ever told.
The good Samaritan. I mean, the Good Samaritan's cool, and it probably, that verse has probably led people to actually be Good Samaritans sometimes. Mm. So the people who actually take it to heart, if they do use it for good, I don't really have a problem with that. And like, you're using it to be a better person.
And that's something that you always see, like, in charity groups and everything like that. People that do operate food pantries or food lines, always churches and everything like that.
Right.
And that's something you absolutely give them credit for.
Oh,
I mean,
absolutely.
Never not.
And, that's benevolent, but now, at the same time, there are some churches that do it in a way that gives it a bad name. Like, if you don't believe, you can't come into this food pantry here. Or you know, I mean, I understand giving out literature and everything, you know, or doing whatever to, you know, maybe subtly encourage, but then to be like, walk in, it's a huge picture of Jesus, and then you're just, they give you little cross cookies or something, you know, it's like, thanks, guys.
Right.
I don't know.
Mm-hmm. I think it's totally fair for them to hand off literature. I mean, you got a little advertising, doing something, so it makes sense. That's all in their spirit of why they're doing this is for, air quotes, Christ, but
yeah. Or well, really getting to heaven. I think a lot of people their religious motivation is getting to heaven. I think for a lot of people it was somewhat religious.
Right, it's just wanting to know that there is a heaven or something else. You know, it's having to attach something to it. That's you know.
I was all in when I was younger. I mean, when I was like an early teenager. And then, honestly, like one of the big things, one of my friends became an atheist. And actually, now he's religious. But one of my friends became an atheist, and we would talk about it, and all his shit started to make sense. And then I watched Wonder Chosen. And where Chauncey is like, have you ever watched it?
No, I haven't.
The show used to be on MTV2. It was just really subversive and fucked up. David Cross was like, that's the most hilarious and subversive show on television, and that's why they canceled it. And that's what he said about that, to bring it back to David Cross a little bit. But he was on the second season, actually. David Cross was. Anyway, on that Horse Apples episode. But it's a really weird show, but they made fun of Bush a lot. They really just harped on religion. Well, not harped, but they riffed on it, basically. Mm. And it was really funny.
Definitely. Like, really kind of commentary, but just at such a level that...
But it's making fun of Sesame Street. It's got a bunch of little puppets, and there's one that's furry, and he's yellow, and he's named Chauncey. And he goes up in a spaceship with this little girl, because it's supposed to be a mock kid show. Okay. And he goes up in the spaceship, and they're looking at the Earth, and she's like, there's the world, just like God made it. And he's like, I don't know what you've been huffing, girl. There ain't no such thing as God. And she's like, and then the world explodes. And then they have to go find God. And they find him in heaven. They go to heaven in their spaceship. And then there's this African American hand comes down out of the clouds, and they play rock, paper, scissors for the fate of the universe. It's so weird, but still, it's kind of funny that, you know.
Yeah.
And I forget what God said. He says something like, I'm going to open up my new chain restaurant. I need the space. So he tells him about blown up Earth. I need the space for my new chain restaurant called Rock, Paper, Scissors, and Shrimp or something like that. I don't remember. Anyway, it's funny because they always riffed on it. And then I thought, you know, like that's... There's something to that. There's a perspective there that's like... against God, and you know, and I don't know, kind of deeply I felt that was where I should be, but I didn't take it on until I was like 16 or 17. Mm.
And see, like, to bring it back to what we were talking about evolution a little bit, you know, I mean, and that's the thing, like, these churches and everything that do, like, really charitable things, like, you know, food lines and everything, that's incredible, but then whenever just the whole, just religion in general gets in the way of advancement, you know, scientifically and everything, you still have people that really doubt or don't believe in evolution and everything like that, and it's just, I mean, there comes a point where it does good, and you have to just kind of take it on a heart basic level, and, you know, I don't know.
Yeah. It's... Do you guys consider, we talked about political evolution a little bit earlier too, with Hillary Clinton evolving on issues, mm-hmm. Obama evolved on the same-sex marriage issue. So do you consider political evolution on a broad scale evolution in general?
Social evolution.
Yeah. You know? And in a way that fits into evolutionary, you know, into the evolutionary picture.
And really, I mean, you see... Like, you see examples like Mitt Romney, you know, and things like that. People that totally do flips that are, and it's weird because we elect politicians to represent us as a people, right?
Right.
And then, so whenever they have an issue, you know, that maybe we as a people feel that way about that issue, the way that they feel about it. But then as a culture, we change, you know, we're ever changing. But then whenever the politicians change with us, you know, then we are kind of like bastardize them and think like, well, oh, you're not holding true to your beliefs. And it's like, well, you guys all have kind of changed your mentality too. I mean, if that's what they're supposed to do in a way.
Yeah, yeah.
In a way, there is a limit. Absolutely. I mean, it's weird though. It's because you see it as this crass being a politician, like flip-flopping and doing all this, but then also like evolving culturally and trying to represent these people that, you know, I don't know.
There's no slavery
anymore. It's a hard job.
Right, there is no slavery, and that's largely an unpopular topic to bring that back, I think, would not go over very well in the modern political climate.
Right.
But I guess, you know, it's nice that people can change their minds. Like, there's flip-floppers and there's people who learn new information or realize that, man, I am behind the times on this. But
yeah.
But there are flip-floppers out there who vote for a political reason. And I'm not saying Hillary's done that, but Hillary's done that.
She's evolved on some issues.
Yeah.
And I think that fits into the evolutionary picture, because at one time, we were basically just, primates. We were, that's the word I was searching for. We were primates and just running around spearing shit and just, you know, at one time we were just foragers. We just foraged for vegetables. Maybe as a shrew, 65 million years ago. We talked about this earlier, actually. I did a podcast earlier today with two members of the Jangle Sheep, and we talked about how human beings during dinosaur times, like 65 million years ago, we were a shrew that evidently survived the asteroid impact, I guess. But we just, I guess we ate, I don't know if we ate other animals, if it was a scavenging shrew, or if it was just a plant eater. I don't know.
Interesting stuff.
Well, they think that whenever we started eating meat is when our brains, like, got bigger, because your brain is mostly fat, and that's what meat is, pretty much. I mean, it's just extra shit on an animal, like.
Gives new meaning to the Shakespeare play, Taming the Shrew, you know.
That's taming us, yeah.
We are all very tame shrews.
Pretty much. We just evolved to walk upright. Yeah. We're fucking bipedal.
Yeah.
There aren't very many organisms that are bipedal, so it's obviously, that's a very obvious sign that we're advanced. Right. Or, like, really advanced.
Mm-hmm. Walking upright is a big thing. I mean, and then using tools of any sort. Right. Mm-hmm. Well, you have animals that use tools now, like the chimps. Crow. The crow uses... The crow's a very intelligent...
Yeah.
Really?
...animal, yes. Mm-hmm. Uses tools, can recognize faces. death rituals.
Wow, right.
Like elephants, too, they have a death ritual, and they also can remember things, and dolphins can communicate on some pretty profound level. But nothing beats making a McDonald's cheeseburger, though.
Right. Nothing makes mass-producing cheeseburgers.
I'm gonna
and
get
beer.
We need to just enlist all the crows to start making our McDonald's things. You know, we'll get little push buttons thing, you know, and then we'll just we'll just enslave all of the crows and just force them, you know. And it's so convenient because they're black, so, it'll fit right in. It'll fit right in with what we like to do just as a people, you know. Just
the hue will be the same as when slavery.
Isn't that terrible?
Oh,
that
man, terrible. That is terrible. Oh.
So accurate at the same time.
Yeah, so weird.
Hey, no, we can
it
sell
fits
it,
with
we
that
can
Disney
sell it
movie.
Like we're enslaving Jim Crow, right?
Jim Crow made
awful.
Me a sandwich.
That's awful.
Oh, man, it is awful. But think about it. We would do that. That's how fucked up we are as humans, is we would actually do that.
Oh,
we could make ravens or crows. Is it just crows or is it ravens?
Well,
it's
a raven family, yeah.
Okay, all those...
And crows and magpies
are those raptors?
Are kind of,
those aren't raptors, are they?
I don't know
raptors. Vultures are raptors, right?
Hmm.
I don't know. Anyway, I think it has to do with like them descending from dinosaurs and shit, you know? Because birds are the modern-day dinosaurs. That's what they are.
Yeah.
We just... They devolved because of the asteroid impact... You know, cataclysmic shit makes, you know, whatever lives there has to change.
Mm-hmm.
And dinosaurs went to little lizards and geckos and shit. Mm-hmm. And then shrews grew up to be fucking humans, and now we rule the Earth. Now we're basically like, fuck you. You get this little area, and we can build our cities all over everything.
Mm-hmm. You know, this is going to be kind of all weird and everything, but it's... I don't know, we were talking about, like, we mentioned dolphins communicating, like, be it through, I don't know, like, sonar, or however it's done, I'm sure there are studies, but,
scientists are out there.
We have no way of knowing, like, you know, that could obviously happen to us, and maybe it has over and over and over again, you know, I mean, and it's just, like, in dinosaur age, they probably communicated in very different ways, you know, I think all animals really do, I mean, you do through body language and through scent and all that kind of stuff, sure, but, I don't know, I feel like that, and this is, I don't know. I feel like that whenever we were, you know, probably starting out or primal or primates or whatever, you know, that's much more connected to the earth and much more connected to other beings and everything like that. And you probably do have a way of communicating just without saying anything at all, you know. And true. And I think that as we have evolved, then we kind of have lost all of that, you know, kind of have detached ourselves from the earth and everything like that, you know. I mean, I don't really believe this, but some people say that, you know, magic probably used to exist or something. We just don't know how to, we can't do it anymore because we're not connected with, like, you know, the earth anymore. I don't know, like, all these shamans from back in, like, these really early cultures and societies that we had, you know, things I learned at Humanities that forgotten, but, you know, yeah, like, I don't know, man, you know what I mean? It's just, I think that is something we've just detached ourselves from it, and that, like, detached ourselves from each other even now. Like, at least at one point we're a whole people going upward, but now it's like we were talking about earlier, like, we've just emotionally and mentally just detached ourselves from each other and everything, you know.
There have been advanced civilizations before this one, I think. I think there's this guy, he wrote a book, what's his name? Graham Hancock, I think, said it. I think that's it. He has a book about how Göbekli Tepe, is that how you... Göbekli Tepe?
I know what you're talking about.
It's
in
Turkey, I think. Yeah. It's like a site where humans dumped dirt all over this fucking site where they it was a city.
Mm-hmm.
But someone hid it. And they hid it from us for a long time, but then with ground-penetrating radar, you can see that it was... And they date it to 12,800 years ago or something, mm-hmm. which is right when... coincidentally, there is in the fossil record, there's like soot, which is which means there was a wildfire that was went across the whole North American continent.
Wow.
So that's why there's a lot of like mega animal skeletons here, like fossils here in North America, but we don't have like camels or any, you know, there's a giant beaver that that existed a long time ago and it died off because of this, they think. And that's why Africa has a shit ton of big animals like elephants and like huge animals because those animals didn't die off in the huge cataclysm that happened in North America. Hmm. So that's what this guy thinks. And it makes perfect fucking sense with like human records and everything. It makes sense, but modern anthropology won't take it on as fact because it's not what they thought originally.
Right.
Really interesting shit, though. He's been on a couple podcasts talking about it, too, so...
No, I mean, I totally believe, I mean, and, like, I feel like if you think about the vastness of a whole universe, how can you not believe in aliens, you know, or at least just something of... But, really, I don't know, man, I just feel like that, yeah, they probably have existed forever, and maybe they, I don't know, it's... Maybe we are the aliens, we weren't, I don't know... You know, you hear those theories, like, that we've been planted here or whatever.
From Mars, you know,
even. The shrews were planted here.
Yeah, exactly. maybe we originally, maybe they had some wild plant life they wanted wiped out, you know, kind of like we do today. Sure. Kind of like how, where was this? I just read this, too. I think in South America or in Hawaii or something like that, there was this giant type, snail type that was, like, eating all this plant life, destroying a lot of things. So we introduced a bigger snail to eat those snails, but instead of eating the snails, they just start eating smaller insects and then helping, you know, just basically wiping out shit. And we do that over and over and over. Right here in Evansville, Metzger Park Zoo, and that was part of the story I covered for the Courier, was that it was the last thing he did. He took me out to the area right in front of the entrance, you know, that kind of ditch down there, and he showed me this type of plant, and I forget what it's called, but we had this type of weed or something that was really destructive and everything, so we introduced this, it's an oriental type plant, it was from, you know, from the Asian continent, but and introduced that to wipe it out, and it wiped it out, but then it did the same thing that that other plant did, except worse, because you can't kill it, and it's just, it keeps spreading. Oh, it's that kind of, like, it looks like curly, wiry kind of
Evansville's gonna be covered with that
vine type thing. Yeah, and we just do that over and over again. Maybe, so to make a long point, maybe we're just shrews that were planted here to wipe out, you know, alien farmer or something.
What if there was an alien civilization, and they knew that if they dropped shrews here on Earth, that eventually they would become humans, and eventually they would create, like, I don't know, what if something that we're creating right now is just the end game that an alien wanted, that a, you know, alien race wanted, and then they're about to come and take their reward for dropping us off here.
Like, sounds like a good screenplay.
You know what I mean? Man. Yeah. That's crazy. I've
pass
never thought
that
about
joint,
it,
bro.
there's not a joint.
I'm kidding. I'm kidding.
There's but, literally not a joint. I'm not lying at all, actually.
But, yeah.
You may think so with this conversation.
Yeah, it's crazy. No.
One thing we have...
infinite possibilities. You're absolutely right. And, you know, I totally believe all that kind of stuff. I don't know. I just don't rule out anything, you know, except for, like, life is a video game, you know. Probably that's kind of ridiculous. But yeah.
Kind of ridiculous.
Kind of, yeah, but you know, you take enough acid, man, and you can believe almost anything. You know, but,